You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferris. Now, we want to hear from you about your favorite video game or computer game, past or present. Get us started right now. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Some backstory on this. Years ago, we had a data presentation here about public radio listeners. They divided public radio listeners into a few different groups, depending on the kind of things they like to hear. You know, some wanted lots of news, some wanted less news, for example. A lot of differences between them. But one thing that all these three groups agreed on, they didn't want to hear about video games. And I thought, come on, there's got to be public radio people who do or have done video games or computer games or what have you. So here we are. Either I'm right and you'll call, or the survey was right, and I'm going to get more and more desperate as I talk through this half hour. So call now at 800-642-1234. There's not going to be no game snobbery or gatekeeping here. Doesn't matter if it's a classic arcade game, a console, a computer game, something you play on your phone or your tablet. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now, some public radio staff will play video games, including a fella named Larry Mueller. He plays this game, or this old arcade game that I used to play called Berserk. Now, I was terrible at it. How about Larry? Let's listen.
Well, it was a long time ago, but I really was good at the game Berserk. And a great story to tell, I was in northern Wisconsin with some people on a fishing trip, and we stopped for a hamburger at this place. And as we were having the hamburger, they had brought in a Berserk game, brand new game for them up there. And there were four teenage boys that were trailing right after them. And as soon as they plugged it in, those boys started playing it without, I watched, they weren't having a whole lot of success, maybe getting through one or two screens. And so I just walked over and I said, well, what's this game all about? And so they said, well, you know, they kind of explained it. And I said, oh, it doesn't sound too bad. And I, can I try it? So I tried it, and I went through about 24, 25 screens, and I said, no, it isn't too hard. And their jaws dropped, and they were very impressed with my ability.
It seems like Larry missed an opportunity to make some money there. Well, let's go to your calls with your favorite video games, computer games at 800-642-1234. Charlie starts us off in Milwaukee. Charlie, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What's your game, Charlie?
I love this topic. My game is called Cuphead. I don't know if you know this game. It came out in 2017, but just recently they released a DLC. Of course, they call it not downloadable content. They call it Delicious Last Course. Anyway, it is a really incredibly challenging game, but it looks beautiful. And it's hand-drawn animation. It looks like 1930s, 1940s animation. There are bosses that you will spend hours on trying to beat. I mean, hours and hours. But when you do beat them, it is thrilling. Like, you really do feel like $1 million. And it's one of those games that you play to kind of prove to yourself whether or not you're good at video games. You know, kind of like a Demon Souls from Software, you know, these kinds of games, I think, really kind of challenge you.
And I got to ask, Charlie, it can be a thin line for me between fun and frustrating. This stays on the right side of that.
It does. It gets frustrating, but once you die, I don't know. I mean, there's a place you can go and they tell you how many times you die. Once you die 400 times, you definitely get a good feel of the game. So it is rewarding, though, that is for sure.
Cuphead. Charlie, thanks a lot for sharing that one with us. It's starting us off. We'll go now to Steve in Madison. Steve, hi.
Hi.
What game do you want to share with us, Steve?
Huge fan of Dragon Age Origins. It's a sort of sword and sorcery, but just an incredibly detailed, rich world that BioWare spent about 5 years building, just back in the days when they actually took the time to do video games right. Just books throughout it, deep characters, a lot of choices, things they generally promise but don't deliver on in more modern games.
And now, is this one you're playing on your own, or is this one of those multiplayer online deals?
It's a solo single player.
Oh, good. I prefer
other
that.
Other BioWare games, yeah, me too. It's I don't want a game that's going to last forever.
Thanks, Steve, for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. We are asking you to call in with your favorite computer games now or from the past. Play in an arcade, play on your computer, play on your phone, a console, you name it. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Judith Marie Heise from our marketing department says her middle schoolers play Portal, Minecraft, and The Sims. She says the husband is keeping up his Animal Crossing island. It's a thing of beauty, a castle, gardens, fancy houses, not a weed in sight. Back to your calls. Daryl is with us in Ixonia. Daryl, hi.
Yeah, my favorite game is called Forsaken. It's a PS1 game. And you have to, like, you really have to learn to, like, to fly this bike. It's not, like, just run around pressing X like modern games. It's coming left, right, forward, back, and they're shooting at you and you're doing the same thing. And you're in a dogfight, and you got to learn how to play the game or you will get killed. I like that. My other second favorite is Battle Tank, which is awesome. There are no good tank games anymore unless you're on a PC, which is a bummer. I wish somebody would invent some tank games for the modern, you know, PS5s and 4s.
Now, that Forsaken, Daryl, sometimes my thing with strategy games or even, arcade-y type games is the learning curve. The fun justifies the learning of how to pilot this thing.
Yeah, I know I'm with you. I hate when I get a game and then you got to go to training camp and then the snipers keep taking you out and then I just put the game away like, okay, I'm not going to boot camp.
All right. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Matt is with us next in Whitefish Bay. Matt, what is your game?
My game is Skyrim Elder Scrolls. It's a Xbox One game and it's like a fantasy game. It really kind of taps into my love of like fantasy and it has a giant map that you're able to explore. It's just an excellent game.
I love the exploration angle and I know a lot of people play these Elder Scrolls, the Skyrim games. What is unique? Is there something cool about the fantasy setting in it that really sets it apart for you?
I would say the different types of characters, they go pretty in depth in kind of their background. It really kind of elevates the gameplay just because you just learn so much about different characters and you're constantly discovering new things about characters, which I feel like is very rewarding throughout the gameplay.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. We also heard from our own Jason Butler here at Wisconsin Public Media. He is on the same page as Matt is. Here's a listen.
I started playing Elder Scrolls V Skyrim during the pandemic, and I haven't looked back. It's crazy because it's an 11-year-old game at this point, but I really like it. One of my kids plays it too, and I like talking about it with them. You know, we talk about different missions and how we approached them. It's an open world game, so it's just fun to, like, go run around, try things out, experiment.
We are trying things out and experimenting by asking you to share your favorite video game, arcade game, computer game, right now at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Brett is with us in White Lake. Brett, what are you playing?
Portal. I heard it mentioned before. I just find that game infinitely challenging. It just you just never know what it is. It's set up in like this post-apocalyptic doomscape where the few remaining humans are swooped up by the AI and they're put in these testing centers. And what you have is that you earn this gun that puts a portal on the wall and changes the entire dimension. It's like, it's not only 3D, I can only describe it as being like infinitely D, because wherever you shoot this gun, you put a hole in the wall that you can get through to move cubes and set them on buttons to open doors, and there's ramps and pits and springboards and all kinds of other weird stuff that you have to negotiate in order to complete the series of puzzles. And it just keeps you busy for hours, and it really makes your brain work.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of puzzle and problem solving here.
Exactly. I just find it so entertaining. I think it first came out on the PS2 platform, and then later Portal 2 came out on PS3. But I still play that regularly. It's one of my favorite games.
Interesting. I maybe should check that one out. I think they have it on the computer, too. Brett, thanks for that. Eric is with us now in Appleton. Eric, what game do you want to share with us?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Farming Simulator franchise.
Yeah, I got a farming game, a computer game one time, not that franchise. I can't remember the name of it. It was terrible. It was buggy, and they just clearly hadn't finished it. I hear good things about Farming Simulator. Tell us about it.
Well, I think part of the charm of it for me is I'm a city boy. I'm originally from Milwaukee. And, I was wondering about what all the different pieces of farm equipment were and everything like that you see, driving through the country roads and stuff like that. And it gives you a chance to experience that and, learn about the farming process and all that kind of stuff. And just really, kind of a change of pace from, some of the more violent games and things like that. It's super peaceful and relaxing and, just kind of a very satisfying game to play.
Eric, thanks for sharing that with us. We are taking your calls about your favorite video games, computer games, arcade games. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with yours or email ideas at WPR.org. Darlene and Lannan emailed to say, Darlene's old school. Pong, hands down. I played some Pong back in the day. It was what we had. You could join in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with you about your favorite video games, past or present, big or small. Play them in an arcade, computer games, phone games, you name it. Consoles, 800-642-1234 is the number to join in. We asked again around Wisconsin Public Radio. Major Giving Officer Matt Scheffler let us know about his favorite game. Here's what he said.
My favorite video game of all time would be Toe Jam and Earl, a game that came out in 1991 on the Sega Genesis. In the game, you can play as one of two hip-hop-loving aliens whose spaceship has crash-landed on Earth, and so you have to walk around the levels trying to find the wreckage of your spaceship while avoiding Earthlings, and you can also pick up random power-ups that are dropped in the form of presents by Santa Claus. That's a very wacky and fun game. It's a two-player game as well, so you can always grab a friend to play with you. It is a lot of fun and still holds up after over 30 years.
Back to your video game calls at 800-642-1234. Neil is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Neil. What are you recommending?
I completely and totally recommend Diablo 2.
And what happens in these Diablo games? This is another one I've heard of and never taken the time to play it.
It came out years ago, and they re-released it again for the new consoles, and everything holds up, and it's beautiful. But basically, you play a little avatar, one of the classes. You have a whole list of abilities that you can grow into, and you go forth and slay demons. It's glorious.
All right. Pretty straightforward. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Neil. Lachlan joins us now in Milwaukee. Hi, what do you got for us?
I have Rocket League.
Rocket League. Yeah, I think my kids were playing that for a while. Tell us, what happens in Rocket League?
Basically, you are in your own custom car, and you play soccer, basketball, hockey, or some weird different types of games.
But you're doing it in your car, which you don't usually do in the real versions.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Lachlan, thanks a lot for sharing that. Rocket League, thanks for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Taking your favorite video game recommendations, what you're playing now, ones you've played in the past and maybe have fond memories. Brock joins us next on the road by Green Bay. Brock, hello.
Hey, how's it going there?
Good. What are you playing?
My favorite game is John Madden Football.
Oh,
but here's
yeah.
the thing. I've been playing it for like 20 years or 30 years, but it has changed dramatically in 2021 with their adaptation to what is called Madden Next Gen. Now, they didn't really say how big of a change it was going to be, but it's so much more realistic that it feels so much more like you're actually playing a real game of football, which is different than all the previous 30 years before, because previous years it was always like, you're playing like a video game, and now it's like you're playing real life football players. And, every single player in the NFL now wears these uniforms that have these sensors in them. And so it's instant time. They're actually able to identify how a player moves, stats, speed, injury, all of that, so they can update it right away in the game. So when you're playing the game, like let's just say Justin Fields gets hurt and they're bringing it back up. Like, that day it's updated in.
Wow. That's up to date. Brock, thanks for sharing that. I had that back on the N64, and I pulled out of the basement the N64 box. My kids were younger to play games on that. And the Madden, it was cool, except the controllers were a little out of sync, so you'd move your player. And so if you tried to play a defensive lineman, it always just like offsides. It would just like bring them right across the ball every time. So that made it a little less fun. Brock, thanks for sharing that with us. Megan is with us now in Green Bay. Megan, what games are you playing?
I've actually got a couple. The first one I want to talk about is this cute little cozy indie game called Unpacking, where you're following the life of this person from the time they're like 10, just in how they're changing their life and life changes just through unpacking boxes in their house. You never actually see them or what she looks like or anything else, but it's just so satisfying to unpack these boxes and put all the things on the shelves, and it just feels good. And then the little story it does tell is like super heartwarming. Like, I cried the first time I played it. Wow. Every single like streamer I've watched like cries at the end. It's so sweet. The next one is Stardew Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a farming sim. I'm obsessed. I started playing it with mods recently, too. That's how much I love the game. My toddler loves it. He loves the cows. But go ahead and you can... It's mostly a farm sim, but there's fishing, there's mining. You can fight cute little monsters, and it's just a great, nice, cozy time. And my last one I wanted to call out was called Control. It's actually like a shooter, a third-person shooter, but you get like psychic powers, and it's this supernatural sci-fi. There's all this weird stuff going on. Your protagonist is this like cool lady that's like linked up with this otherworldly force. It's a wonderful game. I have not heard a lot of people talk about it since it came out a couple years ago, and I just love it.
Megan, thanks for sharing this. I have played a goodly amount of Stardew Valley. It is weirdly addicting, but in a positive way, not like play it compulsively. Thanks for sharing those with us, Megan, at 800-642-1234. Emma is with us now in Madison. Emma, hi.
Hi. I'm here to talk about Cookie Run Oven Break.
Tell us about Cookie Run Oven Break.
It's basically like a level-based runner game where you play as a bunch of different cookies and you collect jellies to earn points. There are also coins and a gacha system, and you can raise friendship with certain cookies in order to collect a special jelly.
Interesting. My worry, Emma, is that I'm very suggestible and I would be playing the game and I assume I'd want to eat cookies all the time. Do you have this problem?
No, I don't.
Excellent. Good. All right. Thanks. I don't think I've heard of that one. Cookie Run Oven Break. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Asking you to share your favorite video games, past and present. Play it at an arcade, on a computer, you name it, a console, a phone, 800-642-1234. Still time for your call if you call right now. Rebecca is with us next in Ashland. Rebecca, hi.
Hey there.
What game do you want to share with us, Rebecca?
Yeah, I wanted to share The Legend of Zelda series. Mm. It's been a favorite of mine since childhood. You know, I'm not going to lie, I skipped school one day to finish it.
Oh, no.
And that was Ocarina of Time back on the N64.
Sure.
But, you know, going forward, I've been sharing with my daughter and my son now, the Breath of the Wild. And it's been really cool to see, you know, them find the love for the same series that I've had. And I would also like to just start, you know, someone else brought up Minecraft. I would say, too, that my son loves that game as well. And so, yeah, The Legend of Zelda just has a special place in my heart. It's such a good game.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Rebecca. Yeah, I played some of that with my brother, and then my kids played a later incarnation. So, yeah, I've got that multi-generational thing, too. Dean Knetter actually says his favorite game is Zelda Ocarina of Time. But lately he's tried a game getting a lot of buzz, Stray. I mentioned this yesterday. It lets you play as a cat. Here is his review.
I had to see what all the hype was about, and so far, it's been really fun. You're a cat exploring a city where something has gone really wrong because it's entirely populated by robots. And the robots are really believable. They've all got different personalities. And I like games where you can interact with some fun characters that feel like they belong in the world. So I'm excited to see where the story goes, and so far, two paws up.
All right. Some production. Thanks, Dean. Elizabeth joins us now in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much. I love the Ideas Network. I've never participated, but I love video games too much to not share. I love this 10-player arcade game called Killer Queen. There are two teams of five, and each team consists of four B-bears and one queen, and there are three ways to win. One is a military victory by killing the enemy queen three times, an economic victory by collecting enough berries, and a snail victory by riding the snail to the goal, and it's such a fun way to meet new people at bar arcades.
Bar arcade. So you go and play this multiplayer game, but in person.
Yes. Yeah. It's super fun.
Killer Queen. I'll look for that, Elizabeth. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Cody is with us now in Chautauqua. Cody, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your game or games?
Two games that I enjoy playing are the Mario, which is, well, everybody loves playing Mario. And the other one is 007 Goldeneye.
Oh, yeah. Now, GoldenEye, that was there was Perfect Dark, too, which was pretty similar. And that's when I played, or people told me it was similar to GoldenEye. Did you ever play Perfect Dark?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, we got to swap games sometimes. I'll try GoldenEye. You try Perfect Dark sometime. Cody, thanks so much for sharing that with us. Thanks to everybody who called in. You could still keep sharing your favorite video games of now or maybe great memories. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us what you play or what you have fond memories of playing. Maybe a story of doing it as a community of gamers. Again, share that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, a grammar expert traveled the country with a roving advice table to have some fun with language. We'll meet the author of the new book, Rebel with a Clause, Tales and Tips from a Roving Grammarian. And when the weather gets hot, don't bake, make some frozen desserts. On this week's edition of Food Friday, we'll keep it cool with some sweet treats. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, our guest traced the history of higher education since 1944 and says high tuition plus the must-have perception of a diploma have contributed to political divisions in our country. He's got some ideas for fixing things, too. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up in a surprising outcome on Tuesday, Kansas voters upheld abortion rights in their state's constitution. We'll talk about what the vote could indicate for states like Wisconsin and how it might impact the 2022 midterm elections. First, the role of college has changed a lot over the decades. The GI Bill opened the door to higher education for many World War II veterans, and some states moved toward tuition-free higher education. Those trends changed over the years with less state support for colleges and higher tuitions. That put college out of reach for a lot of Americans and left many others wondering whether the cost and the debt were worth it. And our next guest says changes in higher education have created one of the major dividing lines in American politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How important was the idea of going to college to you when you were growing up or maybe raising kids? Did it seemed like college was just off the table no matter what? Do you think access to college is an important part of your political views, your world views? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Will Bunch is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. His latest book is called After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. Will, welcome to Central Time.
Yeah. Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Before we dig into some of the history here, I want to start with some pretty recent history, a big divide, a widening divide in who people vote for based on their college career, how much education they've gotten. Can you talk about that and how it set you on this path of researching this?
Absolutely. And you're right, Rob, it did start me on the path because as a journalist who, you know, mainly covered politics, I was trying to figure out some things I was seeing. You know, why were voters in places like the Paper Valley in Wisconsin who were seeing their jobs, you know, outsourced to China or Mexico? You know, why weren't they mad at the CEOs who were doing the outsourcing? Because I would listen to these shows like Rush Limbaugh and the anger I was hearing wasn't directed at at business, you know, or these capitalist decisions that were being made. It was being directed at people in the media. It was being directed at college professors and Hollywood movie stars. And I wanted to try and explain that. And while I was doing this research, you know, every election cycle, college attainment, whether or not you have a college degree, clearly was becoming the fault line in American politics, to the point where in each election, more and more, the Democrats are the party of the college-educated people with diplomas, and Republicans increasingly are the party of the working class people who didn't go to college, and frankly, people who have a lot of resentment towards people they see as elites looking down on them. So, you know, absolutely, you know, political scientists more and more are finding that it's not economics, it's not class, it's even though those things are related, but when you really drill down, it's educational attainment is the biggest determinant these days of who you're going to vote for.
I want to touch on some of the history here to look at a couple different visions of what higher education could be and how that's changed. I want to start in the aftermath of World War II and the GI Bill, which sent a lot of mostly male, mostly white veterans from a lot of different social classes to college, maybe people who never would have thought of college. Can you talk about that vision of education and a road that could have led to?
Yeah, you know, the history of college in the last 75 years is fascinating. And it's really been this constant debate over two questions, which is who is college for and who should pay for it? And in the story really starts in the 1940s, because before then, only about 5% of the American public obtained college degrees. In fact, the majority of people didn't graduate high school and going into World War II. But you had this kind of fluke almost where Congress was looking for ways to reward returning veterans and also to keep them occupied, basically. And they offered this college benefit. And people took it in numbers that just weren't anticipated. You know, a couple million people within 2 or 3 years of the program enrolled in college, to the point where some colleges had to build Quonset huts to house the overflow of people. You know, enrollment doubled at a lot of schools. And what it really established was the middle class could really benefit from higher education. And maybe we should make higher education a public good, the way that K through 12 education has always been in this country. And, you know, so you had this era. Not, you know, in addition to the GI Bill, just low tuition generally at public universities, which were expanding rapidly in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And that era eventually came crashing down, partly because of politics. There was a conservative element in this country that really didn't like what was happening at some of these college campuses because people were taking their liberal education and protesting the Vietnam War, or they were protesting racial segregation. And this backlash was kind of led by Ronald Reagan, who said that college shouldn't be for people's intellectual curiosity, it should be for getting a job. And one of the aspects of that backlash was tuition started to rise. You know, state governments started to support higher education less and less over the years with taxpayer dollars.
So that leads to, as you mentioned, higher tuitions, less access for some people to college. And you use Wisconsin as a big example in the Scott Walker years, fast forwarding a little more, to a sort of politics of resentment against college. What do you see happening here?
Well, a couple things. One, Scott Walker is just a fascinating case study, you know, because he's a guy who, you know, had a picture of Ronald Reagan over his desk in his college dorm room, right, when he attended Marquette. He's really the political offspring of Ronald Reagan. And understand, you know, Reagan wasn't against the dream of people going to college, which, you know, really did become the American dream after World War II. You know, I mean, Reagan thought that people should pay for it, that people should study, they shouldn't be protesting. The generation of Republican leaders that's kind of epitomized by Scott Walker took things to a next level. You know, they began to see college is the enemy. You know, that liberal professors were protesting their conservative politics. They didn't like what students were being taught. And so, you know, under somebody like a Scott Walker, you saw more extreme cuts in state support for the public university system. You saw an assault on tenure, you know, particularly targeting again professors who were deemed liberal and seen as critics. And I think Scott Walker's attitude was summed up in this amazing incident that happened in 2015, where it came out that his administration was working to actually change the mission statement of the University of Wisconsin. Wisconsin had this bold mission statement that, you know, the university's main core value is the pursuit of the truth. And Scott Walker wanted to take that language out, and he wanted to replace it with language that was very boilerplate about how the university is for workforce development, period. And he ended up not doing that. I mean, there was a backlash, you know, many people still believe in the idea that college education is something that's supposed to make you a better person, a critical thinker. But I think that whole episode defines this notion that a lot of conservatives don't like the idea of higher education as a way to develop critical thinking, or as a way to use kind of a general education to study the humanities or social sciences and develop a kind of more tolerant and more diverse worldview. A lot of conservatives feel threatened by that, frankly.
We're talking to Will Bunch. His new book is After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does college fit into your American dream? Were you able to go to college if you wanted to, or was it financially impossible for you to do that even if you wanted to? Do you think that more people should go to college? Do we need other alternatives for post-high school? What should that look like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Will Bunch. His new book is After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, your reactions to what our guest has to say at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go to our callers, Will, let's talk about the modern day now. It seems like the system, as you describe it, is broken for two groups of people, those who can't get into college, maybe for financial reasons, they don't have access to it, and people who can get into college and are worried, is it worth it? Is it worth the debt that's piling up? Describe the brokenness as you see it of our current system.
Yeah, well, our young people are told that they can't get ahead in this country and in our current economy without a college degree. And certainly a college degree, you know, I mean, it can add $1 million to your income over the course of a lifetime. So obviously it's a worthwhile pursuit. The problem is the front end, getting a college degree has become so expensive, and, you know, programs like Pell Grants and financial aid just don't come close to making up the gap between what college costs and what families are expected to pay. And so millions of families have gone into debt to finance college, or they're, you know, intimidated away from the college track. There was a fascinating survey after the 2016 election that found one of the biggest determinants of voting for Donald Trump was people who felt that college was a risky gamble for their family, that they had a sense of economic fatalism, that they weren't going to succeed in society without a college education, but yet college education just wasn't going to happen for them. And that, you know, you mentioned in an earlier question about the resentment. I think that's where a lot of the resentment comes in. So you have a situation that makes people on almost most people on all sides kind of angry, right? The people who have this debt, who, you know, can't buy a house in their late 20s, don't even feel they can get married because they have this debt hanging over their head. But, you know, they're mad about that. You know, the people who've been locked out of this system that's called a meritocracy, but yet they're told because they didn't succeed in it, they must somehow lack merit, that they must have less worth because they don't have a college degree, which isn't true. But, you know, people
feel that they get that vibe from the educated, and they're angry about it. So, you know, it really explains a lot of our divide right now.
Let's go to our callers at 800-642-1234. By the way, if you were just trying to call in, we had a little phone glitch. Try again, 800-642-1234. Rick is with us now in Monona. Rick, hi.
Hi. I heard you mention the GI Bill when I first tuned in, and I must say that one of the great government programs ever invented. I was a poor kid. I served in the Navy, and when I got out, it provided me a chance to go to college, and that experience has changed my life. It's been such a wonderful thing to have, and I couldn't have done it without the monthly stipend that the GI Bill provided. It was life-saving and kept me going. So, first of all, that's my endorsement of that. The second thing I wanted to mention, or ask your guest, and that is, how did college become so expensive? When I went to school, and this would have been in 1970 to about 75, it was like $50 a credit. Now it's, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, and that's for state institutions. What happened to that money that I don't know if the government used to supplement it?
Gotcha, Rick. Thanks a lot for sharing your experience with the military benefits for campus there. And to his question, Will, whole book's been written about this. How did college get so darn expensive?
It's a long story. You know, it's happened. It's really been building up since the late 1970s is when tuition started to rise every year, you know, higher than inflation and even higher than things like the cost of healthcare. That's how much college, the cost of college tuition has risen over those years. a couple things happened. Harvard kind of set the pace on this. They were worried about the shrinking enrollments after the baby boom and during the down economy of the 1970s. They decided, you know, because they were Harvard, that there were certain people from the upper classes that would pay anything for their kids to attend. And maybe they could use some of the extra money to channel aid back to some middle-class families. So they call this the high tuition, high aid model. So they kept, when they raised tuition the first year and they still got the same number of applicants, they went ahead and kept raising tuition every year and they still kept getting applicants. And the problem is most schools don't have huge endowments like Harvard does, and they just can't provide the levels of financial aid for middle-class students that some of these Ivy League schools do. And that's when the gap between what college cost and what people could afford and what they were getting in things like Pell Grants really started to take off. And, you know, colleges generally found that they've been able to market themselves to parents and their kids on prestige more than price. You know, colleges have spent a lot of money on these perks like lazy rivers and rock walls and having gourmet food courts in some cases, because they're competing for students, and they find that they do better competing on prestige. And even if they have to recruit wealthy out-of-state kids or wealthy kids from China or India to fill up the student body, this has become the model, and the people who are suffering are the American middle-class kids who can't afford this system.
Thanks for that call, Rick. We're talking to Will Bunch about his new book, After the Ivory Tower Falls. We'll go now to Patrick in Wausau. Patrick, hi.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm curious to get Will's perspective on this. You know, in the hospitality industry, it seems like communities try to get heads in beds. And in the education community, it just seems like the different education institutions are competing to get butts in seats. What I don't understand is, why is it that we can't provide high school juniors and seniors with some kind of counseling to let those kids know, to let the kids who, you know, who counselors or some assessment would really feel that the kids would thrive in a technical college setting, to encourage them to go there? And kids who would thrive going to a 2 or 4 year community campus, you know, suggest they go there.
Patrick, thanks for the call. I'll expand that even a bit. Will, you say the answer here isn't just about the people who do end up going to college. It's the people who might go to a technical college, as Patrick talks about. But also we should be thinking about people on career paths that don't involve college. What would you want to see in those last years of high school or maybe the year after high school?
Yeah, you know, I think Patrick really, really hit the nail on the head with his question about, I mean, I argue in the book that people are making bad decisions, and people in their families really are making bad decisions at age 18. You know, they're feeling a lot of pressure either to get into the right school or to make a decision about going to college or whether or not going to college, and being told that what they decide when they're 18 is going to determine the rest of their life. Quickly, I'll say, I mean, the book argues, you know, that we shouldn't just reduce the cost of public universities, that we should be able to offer, you know, free or low cost trade schools and other options for people who aren't inclined to sit in a traditional, you know, university classroom for 4 years. But the other thing I really get behind is, and it kind of ties into what he said about the guidance counseling, I think we should have a universal gap year for 18-year-olds, where instead of racing off to college or starting their career, that we have a massive, you know, civilian service, you know, civilian national service, where people, you know, get signed up for projects like conservation. You know, I mean, President Biden has proposed something along these lines, the Civilian Climate Corps, for example. But I would expand it to more areas. You know, working in schools and working in underserved communities. You know, and give people a year to, first of all, you know, work with kids from other communities. You know, we're so siloed right now into the red states and the blue states and, you know, cities versus rural, and bring people from different backgrounds together and try and find ways that Americans can have common purpose, because everybody agrees that's one of the biggest problems in the country right now is division. I'm not saying an 18-year-old gap year would totally solve the problem, but it's an idea that would help get us thinking about the problem quite a bit and make a lot of progress. So yeah, there's a lot we can do to change the system.
In our last just over a minute or so, Will, do you see people taking this problem seriously, tackling it head on, trying to make significant changes that'll help bridge these gaps, both in access to education and mutual resentment for the people who go to college and those who don't?
Well, the good news is we're starting to have some conversations around this, right? I mean, President Biden's right now is supposedly making a big decision on what to do about the $1.75 trillion in college debt that's really hanging over a couple generations of young people. And I think dealing with that debt crisis is a start, but there needs to be a grand bargain. Like I said, you know, if you just tackle debt and don't do anything else, then the freshmen entering college this month are going to start accumulating new debt. You know, we need to come up with a bigger idea of, you know, using our resources as the richest country on earth to figure out a way to make higher education a public good, the way that K-12 education is accepted as a public good in this country.
We'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me. It was great. I appreciate it.
That's Will Bunch, national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He was with us today to talk about his new book. It's called After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. Still time for you to share your thoughts on this, your experiences, maybe. Email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up after the news, a political scientist joins the show to break down Tuesday's vote in Kansas upholding abortion rights in that state's constitution, and to talk about a gap between public opinion on abortion and measures that have cropped up across the country. Also, we've got an ongoing conversation that we'll come back to later in the show. We want to know your favorite video game or computer game of all time, if any, or phone game, you name it, or if the whole concept leaves you cold. Either way, you can let us know right now. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page or email centraltime@WPR.org. I'm Rob Barrett. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.